This is The Real Dirt. Today's Dirt is sponsored by Denver Consulting. Business, compliance, growth, Denver Consulting. This episode of The Real Dirt is sponsored by Cannacraft, leading the way in cannabis science, California. All right, here we are, Real Dirt. Chip Baker and Mr. Soul. Today's guest is one of the most infamous cannabis breeders in current history. Say hello, Mr. Soul.
Hello, folks. Hi, Chip. It's great to be here with you. Rather than infamous, I wish you had used illustrious or something.
Illustrious.
I don't want that negative connotation. I know. Hey, just breaking your balls a little.
No, I never took infamous as a bad connotation.
Yeah, you don't see that negative in there. Anyway, I just had to be a smart ass.
No, I see you got a joint there.
I'm about to fire up. We just rolled this joint of the Cinderella 99 grown from our recent release of seeds. As you know, I know that you're an old soul and has, you know, you've been in 20 some odd years in the cannabis world as I have, and probably have had Cinderella 99 cross your lips a few times. And
just last night, as a matter of fact.
I really enjoy lighting up the new freshly grown from our new release of seeds with folks so that they can really say, like, holy shit, it's the same thing, you know, because of course that's what everybody wonders is, like, wow, is it really going to be like, you know, did he really push the reset button and we can buy the same seeds that were available in 2000 or 1999? And indeed you can, you know, and I guess to settle that question, it's burning on a lot of people's minds, especially the folks who feel like, you know, hey, I really understand how breeding works and stuff. And how the hell did he do that? You know, like, how can he be claiming to bring back the Cinderella 99 from 1999?
Tell us.
Not that difficult, really, if you think about it. When you make seeds, the female plant is the mother and the male plant's the father, obviously. It is very easy to continue to keep a mother alive. And people have passed clones around, obviously, you know, for eons. And so what happened was when I pulled out of the business, I had Genius and Princess, the two breeding clones, the females that I used for the Apollo line and for Cinderella 99. They're in safekeeping with friends, you know, growing them and keeping a mother and clones and, you know, always keeping it alive. So now each of those two clones are 20 years old. I first germinated them in 1996.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah, I guess they are, aren't they, right?
So that's the female side of the equation. I can easily recreate Cinderella 99 because Princess was the mother plant that created the seeds, and as long as she's pollinated by the right male.
Right.
So how do you get the right male? You know, because males are very difficult to keep over the years, like a female clone. The males tend to get all scraggly and kind of, you know, want to pollinate, and they get frustrated. You know, they're not easy
hours
to keep. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, nowadays there's tissue culture, which would be a great way to start storing your males almost like on a hard drive.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You could when you need them, they're there. But what I did was put in the freezer when I pulled out of the business back in 2002 a pretty large cache of all the seeds that I had been working with, and among them were the P94 generation of seed that is the generation of seed that produces the male that, when crossed to Princess, gives you Cinderella 99. So simply grew out enough of those seeds, and I know what kind of a male from that generation will do the job, and they're a very consistent, stable strain anyway, so it wasn't hard to find, okay, there's the right kind of male. In fact, I got what I believe to be, you know, an exceptional, perhaps better than the first time male, and I'm very happy with it, what I'm seeing growing from those seeds at this point, and I'm sure everybody else will be too. It's right around this moment that, having released them in April and we're now at the end of August, it's conceivable that people who bought them on the release date are now harvesting flowers if they're growing indoors. And
so same seed lot on the males, right? And same clone.
Right.
Right. And you just planted out a new seed lot, right? That's based on the historic seed lot from 20 years ago.
Yep, exactly.
And just pollinated your Princess.
Exactly. And that gives you Cinderella 99.
Yeah.
The Apollo line, very similarly for Apollo 13, that was the P75 generation male crossed to to Genius, and that gives you Apollo 13, which, by the way, it's one of the better known hybrids that Brothers Grimm and myself personally created.
The Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's what everybody talks about.
you know, if they're not talking about Cinderella 99, then it's, you know, I have the big fans of the Apollo lines. And 13, you know, we only released about 500 seeds originally. It was,
oh, wow, really?
It was, you know, as you can tell from the fact that I was using the P75 generation of the progenitors that laid up to Cinderella 99. I hadn't gotten to Cinderella 99 at that point. So when I created Apollo 13, I was only on the P75 generation leading up to Cinderella 99. And so I used one of those males on Genius just out of curiosity, made a, you know, small amount of seed and let them go up to Richard at Heaven Stairway, who was our only distributor.
Sure.
And lo and behold, you know, it took off and everybody was really psyched about it. And for me, it was just sort of a stepping stone to getting to Apollo 11, which is what I really was trying to create by using Genius and a Cinderella 99 male.
So what was your, you say you're trying to get to Apollo 11. What was your goal there?
Well, Apollo 11 was, in my mind, you know, the taking Cinderella 99 and then seeing what a male Cinderella 99 would do to the sister of Princess, which, again, you know, one of the things, I don't want to go off on a tangent because I do that far too easily anyway. You're going to get me talking about stuff that, like, okay, we're going to drift too far from the main subject. What were we talking about? Apollo 11, the idea was that, you know, I'd use C99 as the male, and then this would be something that I'd make a lot of seeds of. You know, this is an end product. This wasn't a stepping stone that, you know, I'm on my way to getting to something. And, you know, if you guys want to check it out, you know, I'll make it available to you, which was basically what was happening with Apollo 13. Then it sort of took off and had created a legend of its own. And now I find myself sort of saying, well, I got to fill that niche. And
is that what we're smoking now, Apollo 13?
No, this is the Cinderella 99 from the most,
right.
from the recent pack. Yeah. Now, I'm a terrible manicure.
No one sees that. And you rolled it up, so I'm not going to judge you for a little leaf.
I actually think it's
probably a better sign of a higher quality product.
Yeah.
Most of the problem here in Colorado is the green trim. Mm. They just trim it fresh, and it's so hard to cure and dry cannabis properly that way. And,
oh, yeah. We found here in Colorado with the lower humidity, we leave more leaf on during the wet trim so that it allows the drying process to slow down a bit and then, you know, compensate for that low humidity. And if people aren't doing that, yeah, they're going to have a problem with that. But my partner, Duke Diamond, is always bugging me. You know, not bugging me. Like friends, we bust each other's balls a little bit. And you know, he's like, oh, dude, you know, you got to trim the leaf off that. That looks terrible. And so I'm like, I look at it and I'm like, well, this is basically for my personal head stash that I'm going to keep in a cabinet in the kitchen and a mason jar and a little extra sugar leaf around my bud doesn't bother me. You know, that's
old school as it gets. Yeah. That says you're from the 80s. Mm. That's for sure.
Well, that's when I first learned how to grow and breed, and I ended up working for Super Sativa Seed Club.
Yeah, man. Let's start right there. Let's
you want to go back to the beginning?
Let's give us your story.
Sure, by all means.
Right. So you were an engineer by trade. You studied nuclear engineering in the 80s and became interested in the cannabis.
I had a desire to go back to college and, you know, learn things because I'm a curious guy, and I guess
me too.
Physics, mathematics, all that kind of you know, the things that allow you to look out at your environment and then do a calculation and understand why things work the way they do. That was the way my brain worked. I had a strong analytical side. So that appealed to me, and that's what I was in college for. But at the same time, you know, I had always been a pot smoker as a teenager. I mean, I've certainly drifted away from it for periods of time when
You're
I needed to be serious
anymore.
About things. No, I'm not a teenager anymore.
You're looking good, though.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. Keeping the bicycle is the thing. You know, if you keep riding a bicycle practically every day, you never drift too far off of being relatively fit. But yeah, at that time, you know, my more creative side was saying, you know, oh yeah, you know, you're studying all this high level technical stuff in college, but you have that walk-in closet in your room, and we, as roommates, you know, gang of us, three of us together, were hanging out, and I'm like, I could be growing pot in that closet if I got a light. You know, I got a book, like, I think it was
light bulb relief.
The first book I got was Indoor Marijuana Cultivation by Jorge Cervantes, and so I just, you know, devoured that, and
mine was Ed Rosenthal's book.
Yeah,
his original one.
It's either one or the other of those two.
Yeah,
usually.
That's the camp you end up in. Right, Ed or Jorge.
Yeah. didn't really matter.
It's changed a little bit now, though. Jorge's really taken over that industry.
Has he?
Yeah.
So that was the start, you know, and you dabble, you mess around, make some mistakes. The old adage that I stick to is beginners never underdo anything. So, you know, you right. see somebody who's a newbie and they're having a problem with something, you say, you know, okay, what is this guy doing too much of? You know, he's either over-fertilizing, over-watering, over-something. Mm-hmm. The only thing they underdo is how much light they put on the plant usually. It's like,
really good
I'm
analogy.
Trying to get, you know, like...
I put 3,000s on it instead of one.
Right. You know, they usually overdo things. But so I made my mistakes in those directions. Over for fertilized a plant.
What year was that?
Oh, I'm talking 84.
84. Yeah. All right. That's when the first like halide lights really were for sale in High Times.
Yep,
that's really
exactly.
when it started.
That's pretty
right?
much what happened is I was reading High Times and, you know, you get to the back and you start to see the advertisements and things. And I ordered seeds, I ordered lights, you know, and little by little, you know, got very passionate about it. And I managed to keep up my studies, obviously. I went on and got my master's degree and actually won a fellowship for that they gave me that master's degree for free. I went to Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, RPI, up in Troy, New York. And so that was all like this incredible experience that I felt really proud about. But I like to kind of think back on now how it's amazing that the sideline interest that I had while studying nuclear engineering ended up being my vocation, really, compared to what, you know, the other way around would have been, you know.
Totally. Your passion
what you would
became
have,
your vocation.
And that's
many people
great.
Have lived that. Many people, that's a common thread in the cannabis industry. It's like, oh, I was doing this other stuff really successful, or I wasn't doing anything successful, but weed always worked for me. Cannabis, weed, marijuana always worked.
I knew from the first time I smoked it, it was sort of, wow, this is something that transcends the rest of my experience, you know, here on the planet so far. And I was intrigued by, you know, why is that this really, I feel like plugged in and there's something really very special about this experience and something universal about it that, you know, all your brothers and sisters who share it with you, you know, you kind of know the answer to the huge question that was raised by Jean-Paul Sartre, the philosopher, the existentialist philosopher in Paris of, you know, how do I know that everyone else is having the same experience as I am? Because I can't get inside their heads, you know, and I can't know that even when I see the color red or green, that we can all agree that that's red or green, but doesn't mean that each of us sees it in exactly the same way. We may all have perception. Our own little code green or code red that could be an entirely different shade, but we see it the way we see it, and the other person sees it the way they see it, and we can still agree on it. You know, so the point being, it's a really difficult question to answer. Am I having the same experience? Am I really seeing things and feeling things the same way as another human being? And he used one example that was great, and it really makes it clear that we are. And his example was when you get caught doing something that you're ashamed of, and you look up and you're like, oh, fuck, I'm busted. That sense of shame, you know everybody else. Like, at that moment, you know. Like, he knows what I'm feeling. And I know that he knows what I'm feeling, and that whole circle is completed. So marijuana is a similar kind of thing to me that getting high with somebody or even just letting down your hair and letting somebody else know that you're also a smoker, there's sort of a commonality that builds that really speaks to humanity and the communication and connectedness between us all. So I love it for that.
And cannabis spans so many socioeconomic and cultural differences. Hmm. So many different people unify by smoking weed.
I really believe that everybody smokes marijuana to some degree, and some admit it more than others.
Hysterical. Yeah. Yeah, depend on where you are. You're absolutely right about that.
I firmly believe that.
But what seeds were you growing then? How'd you get the seeds? How'd that happen?
Great question, actually. I had looked in High Times and saw an advertisement with some beautiful pictures from the Super Sativa Seed Club, SSSC, and I sent off an envelope with the money and, you know, the wrapped in carbon paper, as they used to suggest
you to
that
do
you
it.
Do that.
Right.
And I got my seeds. I picked out... couple different strains, you know, nothing like recognizable today. and probably didn't even make the best choices, but I just kind of went by, oh, that sounds good, or look at the pictures,
right, like, at that name.
You know, which we'll speak to now because I know how the seed buying public is today. It's kind of, yeah, like I have to remember back to when I didn't know anything either, and I was just going by the picture and the description.
Right.
But there's some basic things you should know before you buy seeds that I'm going to be discussing later when we get to it. Anyway, so I bought SSSC seeds, started growing them, had some experiences with them, having followed the directions that were in the catalog that came with the seeds, I felt, you know, since they're telling me how I should be doing this and suggesting certain methods that they use, like you growing on rock wool, let me write back to them with my results and my questions. And I started doing that. And I don't think many people did.
Right.
You know, here I am kind of an articulate writer type guy and involved in
this
endeavor.
They probably hadn't heard it from any of their customers.
And so I think their ears pricked up and they're like, oh, look at this guy. He knows how to write. You know, he asks good questions. He seems to understand what he's doing. You know, that probably didn't happen too often. So the owner of the company got in touch with me and asked, can I give you a phone call? And I said, sure. So he calls me and says, hey, I'm really impressed by the questions you asked and your command of what you're doing. We really could use somebody like you who's on the ball to work with us from the state side. I said, how could I help? Well, what we would need you to do is have a cache of all of our different strains of seeds in your home that you could then package into small bites to the individuals who purchase them inside your country, because for us it would be so much more effective and more risk-free if we can send it in bulk to you and then you distribute from within the United States. And of course that makes perfect sense. And I said, absolutely. And I had no idea how lucrative it was going to be, but they started sending me envelopes every week that were just stuffed with $100 bills. And you know, they would also have in that envelope a list of people's names and addresses and the associated order of seeds that went with each name and address. So I would simply, you know, fill those orders and the envelopes kept coming, and that was going along beautifully. And of course, with all of those different seed strains at my disposal in my home and with growing space and a great interest to grow them and breed them and learn, I spent 4 years or so just playing with all those different strains, crossing them, growing them indoors, growing them outdoors. I could tell you some stories of amazing things that you would never have thought, oh my, those two things went together and did that? You know, like how did that? Probability of that's probably very low. But for example, I did a cross with a Durban Tie Skunk Number 1, and both of them require a reasonable amount of time to mature. And you wouldn't have expected that cross to be something that would be able to be harvested in the northern United States. I was living in Connecticut at the time. But I threw a handful of them into the ground outdoors in a patch that was just off of a highway where I could kind of like drive by every day, and you know, they're out in the field there somewhere hidden in these bramble bushes, and it was no real path to get to them because I made sure that, you know, I don't want to beat a path
to
it. Just put them in, and I had to,
everybody knew.
Yeah, you know, like I waited about 6 to 8 weeks and came back and saw that, okay, there's some males, you know, and I can tell that, you know, so I started, I hacked out all the males and left the females, and lo and behold, the end of October, I had these beautiful, glistening, very resinous, purple, budded plants that I've never seen anything since then. It was so damn beautiful. And I didn't keep any of that. It was just a harvest, bring it home, you know, cure it and put it in mason jars. And I relished that stuff for a while. So anyway, point being, I learned a lot, had time to do a lot of cool experiments at my own leisure. And it went on for 4 or 5 years, I want to say. And then I met a woman who became my wife, and she wasn't into cannabis and felt very strongly that I should quit all that.
You gave up weed for love.
Yeah, you know, I made one of those foolish decisions.
Well, you had 5 good years.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, then I had 5 years of marriage, and then she decided, you know, okay, she wants to be divorced from me anyway. And so I got a chance to come back into this.
Well, you were still smoking weed behind the curtains and stuff.
I did get caught smoking pot behind the curtain.
Right.
Yeah, behind her back. Our son had just been born in Scotland, and I was there on an engineering project for a year, some kind of engineering project, nuclear-related thing, right? And the company that sent me there was ABB, ASEA Brown Boveri, and they they had set it all up, and many times with engineering companies, they're sort of behind the curve and need to hurry and get something, you know, before they really have everything in place. And that was the case with me. They put me there before I had my working papers worked out. So to solve that, you know, I'm there on sort of a visitor visa at first, and they flew me out and had to fly me back in again with the proper papers. That's how it works. And they said, you know, just go someplace not too far from where you are and fly right back. And I said, how's Amsterdam sound? And they said, okay. They didn't know me at all, obviously, right?
Yeah, they're so, like, oh, he's going to go see some art.
Yeah, he's going to go walk through the Van Gogh Museum,
exactly.
Which I did do, of course.
But, of course.
But it wasn't before I had toured the red light district and stopped in a few coffee shops.
Absolutely. And you definitely went high to enjoy the moment.
Came back to my wife with, you know, like a little stash in my bag, and she didn't know about that. And I got away with, you know, sneaking off on bike rides and toking up, you know, once or twice a week. But there was one particular occasion where I guess I was just coming home from work that night and stopped and smoked up a little bit more than I should have. Got home and she's like, are you high or something? What's going on? And I got right in my face, smelled my breath. I was busted, you know, Jean-Paul Sartre moment. So,
you went from feeling good to feeling down.
Oh man, she busted me.
Oh, bad times. So that allowed you to go to Europe though.
Yeah, it did. Right? I got started with, you know, my love affair with Europe. I love the European lifestyle and being there. You know, I just really enjoy the hell out of that. And got to spend quite a long time in French speaking countries to the point now I've been speaking French for 25 years. So that's something that I think everybody should try to do. I set it as
learn another language.
Yeah, I set it as a goal for myself before I die. I should at least be bilingual and be able to play a musical instrument. You know, so I can play guitar and speak French. So now, where were we? Because again,
we were talking about going to Europe, man. You just got divorced for getting too high.
Yeah. So after the divorce, I went back to Europe for another couple of years, and that's when I met my second wife, Nadine, and we got married just shortly before returning to the States and moving to Boston, where I started Brothers Grimm, sort of not planning to do that. That's just what came out of those years of work there. Before going, I guess what happened was I had a little conversation with the wife, and, you know, she knew that, oh, you know, every month you scoot up in the train to Amsterdam and come back with your supplies for the month. And what are you going to do when you live in America, you know, to get weed? And I said, well, I used to be a grower, and I could just start growing it again. And she just like, oh, I like that idea, because then you don't have to be out on the street, you know, with seedy types, you know, taking risks or something. And it'll give you she loved the idea of a hobby that keeps her man at home. You know, she's a little bit of a possessive type.
And gave you a little money as well.
She really have reason to be, because I'm
right.
Trustworthy. But she liked that idea. And yeah, and then the extra money on the side, instead of paying money out to people in the street to get your weed, here I've got my own little hobby in the closet, and I'm supplying my weed. Then I'm someplace where she can see that I'm safe. And, you know, so it all appealed to her. And when we got there, you know, that's what we did. But I got to back up one second to fill in the story of where Brothers Grimm came from and how did I ever, you know, get the genetics that became Cinderella 99, Apollo 11 and 13 and all that. So I'll tell you that.
That's a great place to break. Let's break for 1 second.
You want to take a break?
Man. Yeah,
absolutely.
Hey, this is Real Dirt. Chip Baker, Mr. Soul. We'll be back.
Getting dirty.
And we're back. Real Dirt.
Just did a nice one-hitter of genius here with Chip. And that set us up nicely to get back in the game, I think.
I love Genius. It is one of my favorite all-time strains.
And it's something that when people say that, you know, I have to think to myself, well, does this
they
person
have it, right?
Did they really have Genius? You know, and,
right.
And
there's
I
so
have
much
to say,
stuff
well,
out there that's just called the Genius Pheno.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right, and I can easily see, like, the story where you start with the kid at the head of the class and let him retell the story kid by kid to the end, and the story changes over. Imagine 14 years of time that's gone by that Brothers Grimm has been defunct and now we're back in business.
Yeah.
And I always question, well, if somebody says, well, yeah, man, I grew some C99 and, you know, it was great. You
right.
know, I'm like, yeah, I'm glad to, thanks for the kind words. I just wish I could believe that whoever you got that from, you know, was telling you the truth and you had the right thing. And
I was lucky enough to have my finger on the pulse at the time.
Yeah. If you knew the right people,
and
it was definitely
in
available.
2000. Right, I believe is when we first got it, maybe 2001.
I would say, you know, because guys that were in the 77, I was pretty free about sending clones of Genius, but I was
NCGA.
Jealously
That's
guarding Princess as sort of a breeding stock that I wanted to keep to myself and, you know, not have people mucking about with it, to use an English expression, but I'd rather have control over that. And, you know, we'll talk about the issue of control and breeding later and, you know, the attitudes and personalities.
Absolutely. So Genius you could give that out.
I could give that out because I just wanted everybody to share this great cut that is just a blast to grow and smoke. And I think it's really indicative of, when I look at that, I think like, that's what marijuana is supposed to look like. You know what I mean? And, Princess is more of a breeding female that, you know, you don't grow Princess just for the sake of that clone itself as being some sort of ideal. She fits into the category of, wow, does she ever pass on incredible genes to
She's
her female progeny,
right.
And the males, you know, as well. And it's a breed. Yeah, it's a breeding. And so is Genius to a lesser degree. You know, it's more of a base versus an accent, where Princess is something that I use to accent something. The Genius is sort
of there's nothing like the Genius. All of the Genius likes or wannabes, there's nothing like that flavor, right? That high. I mean, it's this incredible, like racy, almost violent high. And I'm not sure, how did it get its name? I have my reason on how it got its name.
Oh,
right.
Smoking with some friends, one commented that like, damn, it's like such a clear high and such an up cerebral high. It makes me feel smart. And so I said, well, maybe we should call it Genius, you know, because it makes you feel like a genius.
Well, the funny thing is I perceived it completely opposite. Is this, who left the door open, Genius? Who let the dog out, Genius?
I could see where it would.
What do. Genius left the food on the counter for the dog?
Dumbass, right?
Man, because I have seen it get people higher and like just psychedelic out there.
It's that up cerebral high for sure. I mean, I always liked Haze as a pure land race, or, you know, it's not a land race, but you know what I'm saying? A very stable, pure strain. And Haze, I was introduced to in a Holland, a Dutch coffee shop in Breda, actually. It's on the southern border where you cross over from Belgium. Just happened to be very convenient for me because living in Brussels, I was shooting up in the train. And if I didn't want to take as much time and go all the way to Amsterdam, hey, you know, if you're just scoring weed, you cross the border in the first town, Breda, you know, and you walk through the town. There was a little coffee shop called the Purple Rain.
Purple Rain.
Yeah, baby. We miss the artist formerly known as Prince.
Absolutely.
And I sat myself down there, asked about the weed. Guy pointed to a little cabin at the back of the bar. I go down there and got some weed, went back up to the bar and sat down. The bartender asked me, you know, okay, what'd you end up with? You know, start a conversation, getting friendly. And I showed him and I said, but what about like, you know, the real good stuff? You know, is there anything that this guy in the back, you know, that I should know about beyond that? And he's like, do you like sativa? You know, like the real racy up high. I was like, yeah, I prefer that actually. I don't like the indicas so much. And he's like, oh, here, pulls this bag out from behind the counter. Looked like leafy, twiggy, crappy weed, you know, and but it was really sparkly and full of resin. And so I said, yeah, let me try that. And I roll a joint of it. And I mean, I got two hits into this joint. And I'm like, holy fuck, I'm like tripping off
this. Oh, yeah.
Crazy good. And the flavor, too. So I say to the guy, how much of this do you have? He says, just that bag. It was like an ounce. And I said, I'll take the whole thing off your hands. Like, how much do you want for that? Just hold it to me. I brought it home. The weed that, I mean, it reeked so bad. The only thing that would stop the smell is if you put it in something that was like a Mylar container. You know, I had these little cylindrical canisters. So just
some unknown town in the border between
right. So
Netherlands
and
Belgium.
That's how I found haze for the first time and realized that I had a love affair with that type of high and that flavor.
You think that was out of the time, a Neville's?
No. This is Hayes Brothers original.
Somebody
in the south of Holland was probably just a local grower who was supplying this little shop, and he had the real original cut, you know, of the real Hayes. And I'd love to find that guy today and, you know, get that cut from him. But I never smoked anything that was purported to be Hayes that was as good as or as authentic as that ever again. That was it. Last time.
Right.
But what I have seen is some great haze influences in other strains. And, you know, the one that we had recently started working with, Super Silver Haze, crossed to a Cinderella 99. And I took advantage of the fact that after over a dozen years of being out of the business, people working with our genetics over the years and saving exceptional clones of Cinderella 99 or any of the other cultivars that came from my time in the business were interesting to me. And, you know, the community is a very generous community, and it's a very loving community. And there were many individuals that reached out to me as soon as I made it clear, announcing myself on Instagram that Brothers Graham is back. Mr. Soul's going to reopen and start breeding. And, you know, sometime in the spring, I'm announcing this, like, around this time last year.
Oh, yeah.
August,
You've got some fans out there. They all called me and asked. They're like, hey, I heard Mr. Soul's back in production in Colorado. Do you know him? Do you know how to get in touch with him? Can you give me seeds?
It's always very flattering, and it's gratifying when I look at the, you know, the write-ups and the things that people have
said.
You're
the only guest that, when I've mentioned it to my friends that they were coming on, that I've had questions or excitement over it.
Oh, wow.
Right. Everybody else.
I'm sorry for your show. Jesus, the most exciting thing.
I have a series of guest questions that we'll get into a little later.
By all means.
You're.
Where was I?
Where are we? We're back in at Brothers Grimm.
I think I was genius. Yeah, how did we get
kept track of this show.
So you do tend to go off on tangents and lose track of what you're
I believe
talking
you
about.
Were just had you'd mostly just come back from Europe and you had planned on starting to grow
some weed.
Oh,
I was going
to
tell you how I found the seeds. Yeah.
There we go.
Here we go. So the Cinderella story.
It's basically that
before leaving to go move back to the States with my new Belgian wife, I told her, you know, look, let's go up to Amsterdam. We'll buy some seeds so that when I do my little hobby, I'll have good stuff to start with because, you know, you can make a great environment, but you can't make an environment great enough to take inferior seeds and make them into a superior product. So, you know, starting off with the best possible genetics is the best bang for your buck that you can possibly make in the game. I mean, you know, if you're going to grow cannabis, you can spend money on light bulbs and different things, you know.
Genetics.
You cannot ever make that environment better than the weak link, which is what the genetics you started with. So I knew enough to go and seek out who was a good seed bank at that time was Sensi Seed. And right there on one of the canals in the Red Light District, they had a storefront and you could walk in, talk to people, see plants. You know, I think, wow, this is great. You know, I'll talk to them, get some advice, tell them the kinds of things I like and buy some seeds. So that's what I did. And then on the way out of there, you know, about a block down, they had a coffee shop that was called Sensi Smile. I think they were related to Sensi, the seed bank. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't let them use that name if they weren't. So I'm assuming that they're related. And I walk in and order a coffee and some juice. And
1996.
About halfway through the year. And I ordered my drink, sat down. I also ordered a Jack Harer bud. because I had gotten Jack Harris seeds. They were one of the strains that I thought, like, well, this is something that, you know, I'm really...
God bless his soul.
Right. Jack Harris, great guy, you know, and the strain that they named after him is such an exceptional...
Brought me into cannabis to some degree.
It's an exceptional strain. I love the flavor. I love the high you get from it. It's a super classy... The aroma, when you get the right aroma, the true Jack Harris aroma... I would like to have that made into a men's cologne that I would wear, you know, when I'm going out for an evening, because this is how classy and how subtle and it's just sandalwood, incense-y, with a musk undertone, you know, just with these notes of citrus. It's just a gorgeous aroma, and the flavor basically falls right in line with what it smells like too. So yeah, I was always a big Jack Harris fan, and so I wanted to smoke a bud of it, and so I did. And as I'm breaking up the bud into a little tray and getting ready to roll a joint, about a half a dozen seeds fall out of this bud, which, you know, it's not even supposed to be seeded. I'm buying Sensimilla in a coffee shop.
But you know better than to be pissy.
Why would I be pissy about it?
Yeah, right. Well, other people may.
I'll tell you what, you know, hey, I'll bring these seeds back, and what we'll do is... this will be sort of seeds that I can just see what happens with. And that adds to the ones that I just bought, you know, legitimate seeds that are supposed to be, you know, in a pack and this is the strain you're buying and so on. Well, you know, to fast forward a little bit, after about 6 months of growing in my new place in Boston, turned out that these ones that fell out of the bud were looking like a much better plant than the ones that came from the seeds, the packs I had bought. And so I paid close attention to what they were doing.
Did you get females?
I got three females and a couple of males, which I didn't keep. Regret that now, obvious, but you know, you can't look back and know what the hell was going on at the time.
But I found a great clone, you know, 6 months after you threw the males away.
Well, the three females were great. Genius and Princess were two of them, and Cafe Girl was the third one, which I did use for a while, but I ended up saying, you know, I'd rather cull that one in favor of just working and concentrating on these two.
Selection.
Yeah. Hard to probably imagine for when you think of the environment that's out there right now with breeding, and they tend to want to just have a million things all mixing together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm obviously from the school of, you know, an analytical engineering type who knows that varying more than one variable at a time makes it such that the results are inconclusive. So I'm varying things very little, and I want to like narrow that scope rather than make it more confusing and wider. If you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when you do an experiment, you can't say, well, last time we had X, Y, Z things going on, and this time it's X, B, C, because now you've changed two things and you don't know which one of them will have created the result that you're going to observe. You know, you go from X, Y, Z and you try X, Y, X or something where you're only changing one thing. So anyway, that's what I ended up doing. Culled it down to those two best females. And even though they're sisters, I mean, they came out of the same bud, there are some very... distinct phenotypical differences in them, in both, you know, the drug qualities of the clone as well as the growing phenotype, the physical vigorousness of the plant and shape of the plant and so on. Even though they had the same mother, obviously, and the same father, they're very different. That is a key to understanding breeding and knowing that when you see a cross advertised in a magazine that's two polyhybrids, the guy who did that is either just, you know, throwing, you know, stuff against the wall and hoping something will stick, or, you know, if he were really genuine about what he's offering, he'd say, hey, this is like, who knows what's going to come out of this, guys, you know, and for that reason, I'm going to sell it real cheap. And good luck with your pheno hunt. And there are guys out there who like the pheno hunt. I don't know why. I mean, I got two dozen seeds. I'd really like to see if I get a special female out of this. And who knows what it's going to be.
It's gambling.
But if you can, on the other hand, me personally, I'd prefer, since I do this as, you know, a way of making a living and it's a business. And sure, I assume that's what many people who are investing money in purchasing seeds and all the time and energy that it takes to do a grow, that, you know, the profit from having the best possible result is important to them. So,
and you know, a lot of people just buy seeds and collect them. Have you seen this? Like, they're baseball cards.
Well, I hope they're storing them in a freezer, because if they're in their sock drawer, you know, 10 or 15 years from now, they're going to be useless.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know if that really happens.
Then the little disclaimer will really be true, that they're for novelty purposes only.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I forget. Again, we're drifting off of where we were there, but I got the two great clones, Princess and Genius, and I ended up, just sort of drifting away from and culling almost anything else out so that I could start working on making
a seed. You had breeding in mind at this point?
Well, right. What had occurred to
me— From the beginning?
Yeah, here, let me expand on that and articulate exactly what was going on. What happened was, seeing that I had these two great females, what do you do with them in future? I guess I sort of fast-forwarded to, what if I ever had to move in, long distance or something? I didn't think about saving the clone. I wanted to have the ability to make seeds that would also give me great plants like that. So I realized that this cubing process I had read about once, of backcrossing the male progeny to the same female over and over, would lock in the traits of that
cubing
female.
Yep, you were
cubing
of,
the clone. Yeah.
Right.
Hey, it was actually a cheesy article in High Times a long, long, long time ago that described it in some rough way. And I just refined the ideas into, okay, scientifically, what can I take out of this that I know is true and will be, an experimental, a repeatable experimental right. result. And working from that, and I came up with, by the correct selection of the males in each generation, you can get that done.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to explain cubing exactly and what that is, but hey, let's take a short break now.
Oh, by all means.
Yeah, Chip Baker, Real Dirt. Dirt, Chip Baker, Mr. Soul.
It's only rock and roll, but I love it.
We had to take a little break there.
Mm-hmm.
A little technical difficulty, some pizza maybe.
Absolutely. There were energy needs to be seen too, both human and electronic. So we saw to those, and we're back on the air.
We're back. Yeah, we also
kicking it around.
A genius joint.
Ooh, put me in a good mood. Put me in a good mood.
I was stuttering. I was so stoned, so we had to make some fairly strong coffee to come back.
Yes, strong coffee for strong men.
Yes.
I recommend it.
Yeah, so,
We were just
getting into cubing, I believe.
Yes.
And I was going to ask
it
you.
It led up to cubing because we were talking about coming back from Europe, and I got started in my Boston location. And during that time, discovered Princess and Genius and wanted to be able to create seed lines from them that then people, myself included, would be able to replicate very similar plants, if not identical types of plants. So I had read about the cubing from some cheesy article in High Times that then I kind of extrapolated the ideas into something that would work and used that over the course
High Times is good for something, that's for sure.
Hey, let me hit that whole theory real quick so that, as we move on, people aren't going to sit there and go like, yeah, I wish he would have said, what is cubing exactly, before he then, he takes it to its logical conclusion. But
let's do it.
So the idea being, I try to make it in really simple terms so people don't have to understand breeding or anything. I put it in just layman terms. You know, you and I are Americans. Most likely, you have some European descent. I know in my case, it's Italian on one side and German and French and Dutch on the other.
Scottish. Scottish, my people.
You got some Scottish in you, do you? Hey, you can't pass a year in Scotland. So picking up a thing or two. Anyhow, the mixing of genes when, you know, a mother and a father come together, it's a 50-50 thing. You know, you're getting half your genes from your mother, half your genes from your father. And I brought up the fact that, you know, Americans tend to be sort of a mixing pool, and that gives you the example of, well, what happens when you mix, you know, some things that are stable, like stable strains, like an Italian strain or a French strain, you know. Like, right. If you think about our predecessors back in the old countries, they had a sort of a stable phenotype, which is what we call, you know, a plant's physical characteristics when you're looking at it, and including everything up to the high in the taste that it gives.
Geographically isolated. Gene pool.
Yes, exactly. So from non-communication between such regions over long periods of time, typical phenotypes were established in each of those areas, not mixed. And then hybrids are a mix of any of those two stable strains together, and that creates an F1 generation of hybrid. At that point, if you have two very stable strains coming together, you get what I could kind of describe loosely as a blender effect. Like, you're throwing the two of them into a blender and you're going to get something that will be a combination of the two. And in each of the categories of which trait that you're looking for, it may be from either the father's side or the mother's side, but probably one of those or the other. And then a certain percentage of the progeny will also be sort of a mixture where it's like a kind of a combination of those two things from the mother and father. That's pretty easy to predict and seems very logical. And what happens today is that many strains are combinations of polyhybrids, which are, you know, something that is not a stable strain crossed to something else that is not a stable strain. And there's a lot of variation in the genes that could contribute to any of the very important traits, you know, the five or six important traits being like your high flavor resin production, the vigorous nature of the plant while growing, and, you know, some of those other physical characteristics. But mostly it's the amount of resin it produces and how high it gets you, and, you know, is the yield good, and what's the flowering time, those types of things. So you maybe have a basket of 10 or less traits that you really want to lock down and say, I want the best of all worlds, or I want something that has, you know, accentuates some of those traits over others because they're the ones that are more important to me as I go through a breeding project. Well, when you're trying to combine these sort of Americans, you know, say you get a girl from Rochester, New York, and a guy from Tampa, Florida, and they have kids. It's anybody's guess, you know, with those kids. There's a lot of variation, if you notice, among American kids. You will not find, you know, if some woman from Genoa and a man from Genoa, you know, Italy, have kids, they're going to look a lot like the rest of the kids in town. You know what I mean? So that's the analogy that I'd like people to have in their minds, you know, when you don't have to know all about ratios and genes, combinations and chromosomes and X's and Y's. Let's forget all that and put it to the side for the moment. Let's just all be guys on the street talking to one another and think of it this way. Look, if you're getting seeds that are coming from, you know, two American parents, then it's going to be a crapshoot what comes out of those. So if you're buying a pack of seeds and there's a picture of the female that you should get as a result from that pack of seeds, and you know that the parents are both polyhybrids, it's about maybe 1 in 100 shot that of those 10 seeds in that pack, you're going to, out of the 5 females you probably will get, one of them is going to look like the picture on the pack. You know, it's just not going to be that reliable. Whereas if you have stable strains, you're buying something like, in my case, the one that I'm most known for is obviously I bred Cinderella 99 to be a stable strain that when you grow out 10 seeds, you're going to get 10 plants that look like clones of each other essentially and have most of the same traits with very little variation from one to another. When I say that, for example, the taste could be, I'm saying it's a tropical fruity flavor, you know, and you can say, well, that could mean mango or pineapple, and you're going to get one or both, right, or sometimes combinations of those. And so that's what I mean by a stable result that you can always count on. Well, see, I grow my 10.
It's predictable.
Yeah,
it's predictable.
Predictability.
Right.
So that's
a big issue people don't understand is predictability versus stable. Like I can predict that you're going to get these traits that come off these plants, mm-hmm. right? And they might all look a little differently, like a branchy or, you know, or monocola, right? But you can predict it. So yeah. That means it's stable.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that's in my mind a lot lately as I roll out Brothers Grimm since this past April 20th. And, you know, people ask questions and I answer them. And I also see what's out there on the market. And, you know, I kind of think to myself, it's apparent to me that the seed buying public is thinking in a simplistic way that's not doing them a good service because they think, like we talked about mixing an Italian male with, say, an English female or something, and the differences in those two isolated gene pools would then give a predictable result that would either be, you know, the traits would mirror the father's side or the mother's side, or then there'd be a certain mm-hmm. group among them statistically that would be a blend. It becomes so much less predictable when you're talking about these mixtures of two different polyhybrids coming together.
Right, with a diverse lineage.
Right, and that's exactly the kind of thing that I am known to avoid in my own breeding, and people know that the Brothers Grimm strains are going to give predictable results. You see a picture on the pack of what the end result female should look like, and the phenotypes that you get out of those seeds are going to look like that, you know, and you'll get a high percentage of that. When people are out there buying seeds right now, it just seems to me as I see the comments, and I'm kind of lurking and watching people talking on Facebook or Instagram or what have you, and observing that, you know, they have these misconceptions, like they think, every time I take a male and a female from two different strains, I'm going to be throwing it in a blender and out comes this sort of homogeneous mix of the two. And it just doesn't work that way. And I often see the term pheno hunt being thrown around like it's a badge of honor or something, like, oh, yeah, dudes, I'm over here, you know, vigorously
I'm on the
working.
Pheno
I'm
hunt.
On
this. I'm on the hunt.
Yeah, like,
I'm
okay.
Cracking seeds, jeez, looking for the one.
One of those adventure heroes. What was that guy? Ford played the actor. Anyway.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, Indiana Jones.
They're on their pheno hunt.
Yeah.
And I say, where's the
Indiana
honor?
Indiana weed.
Where's the honor in that? I mean, what exactly are you trying to do? I'm usually concerned with working a strain in a particular direction with certain, you know, well-established goals and varying only a variable at a time so that I can tell what the effect of that change did and then how to predict the next thing. So I guess I'm rambling as usual because these are the things that
cross my mind
at the moment.
So let's get a clear picture of the cubing.
Oh yeah, let's go back.
A clear like 90 second. This is how it works.
Good job, Chip. You caught me. Where I went off on a tangent was I was about to say when you're taking the cubing route, here's what's happening. You're taking 50% of your genes from your mother and 50% from your father. So if we don't vary the mother and in, you know,
keep the clone.
Right. In cannabis, that means you're keeping a mother clone always growing in the vegetative state. And whenever you breed with her, you are breeding with a branch that has been cut from the mother and rooted and now becomes a clone of the mother. Put that in a flowering room and let it be pollinated by whichever male is, indicated at that moment to be the correct one to do. And that starts off with, you need a male to start with. So I chose an unrelated male. Why? Why wouldn't I choose like her brother or something that would keep it so much closer? Here's why. I am trying to breed away from the influence of the male because I'm trying to favor that this clone is trying to be replicated in the seed line that's coming from this project, okay? So by using a male that was dissimilar enough from Princess, the female, so that I'd see it obviously.
You'd see the hybrid.
Yeah.
You'd see the father's side.
Yeah,
and you'd see the mother's side.
Bingo.
Totally.
So I cross her with a Shiva skunk male, and then the progeny I called P50. In other words, 50% of Princess.
Right. So crossed with the Shiva skunk male into the clone.
Yes. So now you've got Princess crossed with a Shiva skunk male. That creates the generation I called P50. So you grow them out, look at the males that are coming from that generation, and look for the ones that have traits that mimic the Princess and rather than the father side, okay? So using those males, pick the one that looks the best in terms of, you know, the other traits that you can lock down and say, well, it's a male trait. It's shared by males and females, for example, vigor, height, flowering time, those types of things. So by looking at the males and evaluating all of those things, I'd say, okay, here's the male I like. And now I cross that back to another clone from that original bush, you know, that's original, sitting in the vegetative
clone.
Room, right?
Yeah. Right, original clone.
So Princess is now getting crossed to what is effectively her son. And so now the progeny from that, he's bringing his 50% of Princess into the equation, contributing mm-hmm. half of that, in other words, 25%. She's always giving 50% every time she's crossed.
Absolutely.
So now you're at P75. And if everybody is, you know, carrying along with the conversation, they're going to see that, oh, okay, so the first cross, you know, it's half the mother. Now the second time, it's three quarters of the mother's genes in this next generation, right?
Right.
So now you take one of those males following a similar principle as I just described, pick the best one, cross it back to the Princess again. She contributes her 50%. Now he's contributing 37.5%, and you're getting essentially what I call P88. So it's 88% of the mother gene. One more time gets you to 94%, and then the next time is 97%, which to my mind was close enough to being 100%. So I got to where I had a generation of P94 that I could then select males at any time, cross back to that clone, and create a brand new batch of the Cinderella 99. Which is what I did last year when I came to Colorado and opened the doors again. You know, in this environment, I felt I'm finally comfortable to step out of the shadows and be Mr. Soul and, you know, take my place in the cannabis community that I walked away from in 2002, regrettably, because, you know, I felt insecure at the time, and lifestyle changes and such that happened between then and now. Were, you know, sort of a wonderful journey and a path that I feel like I'm coming to a full actualization of myself here. And so it's just a great time. I'm feeling really good about bringing Brothers Grimm back and letting everyone push that reset button and eliminate all the years of people copying and trying to recreate something that, you know, was no longer in existence. And give them that original article back and then pick up where I left off, because I certainly had a lot of really interesting projects in mind and some many ideas that I never got to work out. And with my new partner, Duke Diamond, we're able to really roll up our sleeves and do some amazing fun projects that people are already starting to get a whiff of. And there's a buzz starting that I'm really proud of. So
yeah, absolutely.
Take it from there.
Absolutely. Definitely. You really kind of skipped over like a significant portion of your
Good.
Story.
Glad you
though.
Picked that out, because right. I missed it. I assumed
well,
too much.
You went from the breeding of it,
yeah.
right? And you've got your seeds, your C99,
yep.
and then all the way to now we're back.
Yeah. How did I leave?
Well, you know, more. I just like to touch on this a little bit. Was, man, you became a phenomenon quickly. Like your seeds proved out through Richard. He was selling them. What was his seed company called at the time?
Heaven's Stairway,
and they had the support of the growers world.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Or
people
or Overgrow.
Overgrow community.
Overgrow community.
Very much so.
And you were one of the first seeds that really used that digital marketing platform. And it was kind of an underground digital marketing platform. We didn't even call it that.
No.
There weren't even those words for it back then.
Of course not. No.
Right. But you had, that was the cannabis community's social media presence.
Absolutely.
Right.
And not that we knew it at the time.
Not that we knew it at the time.
You know,
no.
Somebody made a quote recently that I was like, oh yeah, that's true. When you're making history, you never know it.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Nobody who's making history realizes it yeah. while they're doing it.
Yeah. You mentioned the 77. That was a private internet group of a handful of people. And
exactly.
Overgrow kind of came out of that, I believe, but
well,
for
yeah.
public.
In a sense,
right?
It was a much bigger and much flashier advanced platform that did a similar thing for a bigger audience, and compared to what the 77 was, which was kind of like really elitist, hand-selected group of guys. We were all, mutual admiration.
Friend of
club.
Friend.
Yeah. And right. You had to be invited by, somebody says, this guy's really like, got to be one of us, or something. And that's how it progressed. But then, to segue into what you're saying is that Overgrow became kind of a publicly accessible platform that gave similar kind of camaraderie and ability to share those things and have a social media type platform way back in the mid-90s or toward the end of the 90s.
The seed sales kind of came through that website, advertising right there.
I didn't really pay attention to that as it was happening, but
You didn't realize it, right? Because it was such a pioneering effort that you could have this content marketing strategy of the people making the product, supporting it through these blogs or these interactive boards.
It was word of mouth, man. a lot of people in advertising will tell you, you can't buy word of mouth advertising, and that's the most sincere for the consumer.
Organic.
The consumer can look at, word of mouth is typically the most reliable. Well, of course, the company themselves isn't going to hire an advertising company that makes them look like shit. And usually the people who are the most dissatisfied are the ones with the biggest voices. So if you're listening to the crowd and getting the consensus on the street, what's the word of mouth kind of buzz about this company, and you're not hearing anything bad, that says a lot right there, because usually it's the ones that, a few bad eggs will say, start screaming. Right. And if you don't even find that, then you got somebody who's, geez, that's a solid, they got a great reputation. And that's what ended up happening with us. I mean, we talked earlier about show business. You step away for 6 months, even 3 months, if you're a singer or some sort of an act,
And you're out of business.
They forget about you. Your name is kind of gone. And so when I left for over a dozen years and came back and found that, the buzz about Cinderella 99 and Brothers Grimm was still very strong and held up over those years, it was very gratifying, flattering, and made me feel proud and want to allow people to have even more. If you think that's good, wait, let me just get back in the game. I'll show you what I would have done, if I had stayed in, and bring you back the old Cinderella 99 seeds so that you can grow them. There's a whole generation of kids out there that are like, oh man, I smoked that in college and you didn't realize that there's no way to get it and stuff. But, it was my whole introduction to marijuana, Very, touching little stories that the people email me and stuff. So,
you were absolutely a pioneer in the industry back then. And there was a handful of people that were on that Overgrow site as with support groups, I believe that's what they call it. And it was Brothers Grimm, Mr. Nice.
I liked to sort of put out my stuff, and I'm a photographer. I became a professional photographer later on, but during that time I was still doing photography to some degree, and putting my pictures up of what I was doing was something that up until that time, remember, nobody had that today, what we take for granted, this ability to put something on YouTube or post a pic,
it's so easy.
On the fly. Almost
so easy now with your camera. I mean, your phone, right?
You're driving along, shotgun in a car with somebody. And, meanwhile, while you're talking, you got a conversation going on with three other people in social media, and you're texting and sending pics and stuff. Like the idea that you could even be doing that back in the day, 96 or 8, that you had a device in your pocket the size of a pack of playing cards, and you could communicate with anybody all around the globe by either voice or textual methods and send pictures and video clips and sound. I mean, blow your mind. We wouldn't have believed it if you told
absolutely.
Us that.
Absolutely. Then,
But here we are.
Dick Tracy right here.
Here we are.
Star Trek.
Yeah, totally.
I'm raising my phone.
What did they call it? The communicator when they put somebody down and beam me down, beam me back up. And they tapped on those things on their chest. What the hell were they called? Anyway.
Well, they had the tricorders. That's what I was referring
to. Oh, the tricorder,
too. That was the little tool they would always wave around.
If you have the right app on your phone, then it's a tricorder. Totally.
Awesome. Well, hey, man, let's take a break right there.
Okay, cool.
Real Dirt.
Yeah.
Chip Baker.
Rehydrated.
Mr. Soul. We'll be right back. Dirt, Chip Baker, Mr. Soul, and we're talking breeding, cannabis history, and other weeds, Brother Grimm seed stuff.
We're talking about some specifics. You were
breeding. Let's get back into the breeding, man. I know there's so much stuff to speak here, but we were talking some breeding techniques, and there's something I'd like your explanation or opinion on. A self-generation to produce all female seeds,
yes,
versus F1 type generations, which
right.
are...
Well, traditionally, the F letters, I think it's best that we start there because that's what's traditionally been the breeding technique over centuries of humans cultivating plants. And F stands for filial, which essentially means brothers and sisters or, you know, of a family.
Hey, brothers hey, and now. Sisters. Yeah, man.
So anyway, that's what the F stands for. And 1, 2, 3, and so on means continual generations that were bred from the previous number. So in other words, to get 2, you bred a brother and a sister from the 1, then you get 2. If you breed the 2 to each other, then you get the 3. If you breed the 3s together, you get the 4. And this was happening by necessity. When you think about it, we didn't have indoor lighting. We didn't have a way of advancing a generation in less than a year. We went by what the sun did for us. So every year, you would, by necessity, the seeds that were being grown in any given year were the cross of a male and female, which were brother and sister from the generation from the year before. So each year, you're getting an F plus 1 number every year. So that's done in nature or in large crops, like in the days when people didn't have a lot of control over it, random crossings of the males and females from each season create the seeds for the next season. We became cognizant of the ability to selectively breed and block certain males and only breed some males with some females and then perhaps lock in traits each time. In the next generation and so on. And that's where man began manipulating. And it's the beginning of GMO, which everybody hates the idea and the word and the phrase. But if you were taking it for its really literal meaning, it's genetically modified organism. Well,
right.
Every time you breed selectively, you are genetically modifying that result, right?
Right.
Are we not? Not in a sinister way, the way that people think of GMOs in their foods, which I don't know whether there is a distinction between the two. I don't think there is necessarily. So they may all just be the same thing as just creating hybrids and selectively
right.
breeding for.
It's kind of like the term organic. Everyone has their own version of what that means.
Yeah. So anyway, let me stay on track because it's a difficult thing to do, keep me from going off on a tangent.
I know, all that genius we've had today, it's keeping us going there.
It's my nature.
Yeah, yeah.
I get it done, you know, in a circuitous way, but I get it done. The F1, obviously, maybe it's not so obvious. We were talking earlier about how stable strains and land races and isolated gene pools and such created predictable phenotypes. We use the examples of like the different nationalities, an Italian versus an Englishman or, you know, an American and so on, being a mixture of those. So an F1 generation is any cross between 2 stable, dissimilar strains. So if we took Afghani and Thai, let's say, for example, they're 2 dissimilar land race strains and cross them to get an Afghan Thai, it's generation number F1. You throw that bunch of seeds, and if you took those same male and female and crossed them again, be an identical set of seeds, but you know they'd always be F1. That never changes. That defines who the parents were. Now, the result of the F1 generation in general, in breeding terms, is a very homogeneous sort of a blending effect of the two, and you get as we discussed earlier, the male or a female influence in many of the males and females that come out of the that generation. And so it is kind of as much like a blender effect as you can get in breeding, is that F1 generation. Now, remember that those two parents have brought in all these different genes, and for one, for some very logical reasons that I won't go into because of the technical nature of it, and I wanted to keep this all layman, but they are stacked in such a way in the F1 generation that only the dominant traits from either side are expressing themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, that means that it's a very predictable result all across the board. But if you were to take the males and females, the brothers and sisters of the F1 generation, and cross them together, you're going to get what we call the F2 generation. And that's when the stacking is reordered in each of the resulting seeds that comes from the female that's been crossed by her brother in the F1 generation to create the F2. So instead of it just being a choice of a like a toggle switch, it's just A or B, sorry, for each gene, boom, 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 it's going to be one or the other. This now becomes almost like half the alphabet. You know, now you have 13 different combinations for every one of those things that used to just be an A-B selection. And that's where you start to see like, oh my goodness, who would have thought, you know, in America, like we have the mother and father have kids and neither of them has red hair. And, you know, they get a kid who's freckles and red hair. Like you wouldn't believe it. Like, oh, well, you know, come to think of it, your grandfather had nothing but red hair. And that came out finally, you know, because it shook out of that lottery bin, you know, of numbers that's being jumbled around and resorted each time that a new seed is being created by each generation. So that's where all of this variability comes from. And I also see sometimes we were earlier talking about how there's a misconception in the seed buying public that they talk on forums and so on, and it's almost like a badge of honor. You know, the one guy will say, hey, I've got the F5 generation of that. Oh, man, that's freaking awesome. You know, I only had the F3s myself. Like, it's not like, you know, the stars in the military that they give a general to put on his shoulder. The more of them that you have, you know, the higher that number is, that this is somehow a better generation. That would only be true if each time a new generation is being created, the selected male and female to create the seeds for that next generation were very intelligently chosen to improve upon what it was in that last generation. If that's not happening, you could be going in the opposite direction. You could say everything from the F1 generation onward sucked and got worse, you know, because these guys didn't put them together right. That is no guarantee. That number means nothing.
Right.
It only means something if somebody can explain how they got there and what the choices were in each generation that they chose and how they felt, okay, I locked down that trait. Now I moved on and I'm locking down the next trait. And it's successful because I'm growing out enough of them that I've seen this large population and these are the traits and this is really happening and I can show it in a repeatable scientific way. You know,
absolutely.
That's how it's done. So the number means nothing. And the chances of people doing that correctly out of the group of people who are putting out seeds,
got the right gamble
in the world right now,
nose for it.
You'd have to say, okay, there's like a handful of the really classy outfits that are out there that have a reputation for being a big, solid operation that does it right. And of them, you know, then you have your choices. And then going back to the S1, you see that term used like in the place of the F, where we talked about that meaning filial. Right. S stands for self.
This is a bro science term, right?
I don't know. it is and it isn't. I believe that in actual botany and genetics, there is an S. You know, I'm 99.9% sure that that's true, that they do use that terminology in botany and breeding. S meaning a selved plant.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, not all plants are like marijuana where there's a male and a female. Many flowers out there have both the male and the female parts on the same organism and actually self-pollinate and make the next generation in that fashion. But what we've done way back when I came into the scene in the mid-90s, there was a big wave of hermaphrodism problems in Canada and in the United States, people passing seeds around and, you know, the seeds are growing up into Hermes at a much higher rate than you would expect. And to me, that was odd because remember, I had all those years of working with SSSC and they had really stable strains and they were also quite, you know,
they were thinking about it.
Yeah. they were not given to Hermie. They just weren't. You know, I never even thought about it because it just never happened. And then I started reading about all these guys saying, oh, yeah, but that one Hermied and blah, blah. I'm like, and then as I watched and sort of lurked over the situation for a while, I realized, oh, there's a connection between these guys complaining about these Hermie seeds and this technique that all the breeders are using where they're getting fancy and going like, oh, we're making feminized seeds. It's incredible. Here's what you do. You induce the female to grow male flowers, and then the pollen from those male flowers, obviously it was a female, so it doesn't have a Y chromosome to contribute. It's all going to be X's, so you're always going to get females, right?
All female.
So, but the generation of seeds that are thus created are prone to hermaphroditism because right. That's how they were created in the first place, remember, right? They made this plant become a Hermie.
They're going to hermaphrodite.
Right, and then they use the pollen that results from that to create the next generation. Now, I would need to call upon several journal entries and scientific papers that have been written where it's been proven that that process results in hermaphrodites.
You know, we can just say but it's sour diesel, gorilla glue, Kim Dog, all of those plants have hermaphrodism in them.
Right. All were created by some form of selving to get there. And now, that's what the S stands for, selved. So S1, you know, it really the number shouldn't go up from there because the next generation, right. I mean, what are you going to do? You can call it like selving back to itself again. You know, okay, we did it again.
So you guys don't produce feminized seeds?
We don't at the moment. We just signed on to do a worldwide international seed distribution, and they are going to eventually ask us, can we get you guys to work on feminized seeds? And the answer is yes, because the way that we will be creating them is not the way that I just described to you, which is the way right. that, you know, back then these guys in their first foray into that idea did not have it completely together yet. You know, they're missing a piece of the puzzle.
You know?
No, not really. They really were like thinking, I'm really pretty clever here. What I'm doing is I'm reversing this female. Yeah. I'm making getting pollen and I'm going to make feminized seeds. And I had a couple good friends in the 77 who used to like, you know, to fancy themselves, you know, as experts in that whole genre of breeding. Okay, you guys do your thing with these feminized seeds. That's not of interest to me. I always eschewed that, you know, and well, I'm like, okay.
It's such a shortcut, you know.
But in recent study, because I know there's a demand for it today, and I know that some people are getting fairly good results from it. You know, it's not the random guys who just do it like on a whim that are getting
it now.
There are companies who have gotten it to, okay, this is predictable now that you get the phenotype that is described and they are all females and they're true females. They're not Hermies, which 90% of the time, if you just buy feminized seeds off of the internet, you're going to get the kind that will Hermie. And I always say, would you rather go into your crop of flowering plants that you think are all females and find a real male or what would be harder to find, a real male in that group or a Hermie? The Hermie is really hard to find because it looks like a female until it's too late. And then it's like, oh, fuck, it was a freaking Hermie. If it had been a true male and you knew that this crop only produced true females and true males, it's a hell of a lot easier to just go through there and pull the males because, you know, anything that's already shown some pistils, that's definitely a female. It's not going anywhere. It's staying female. So I really hate Hermies and want to stay away from that. I've never gotten into the whole feminized seed thing, but there is a second step to after you've created that first self-generation of, you know, hypothetically feminized seeds, there is a percentage of the progeny that will be actual feminized without the tendency to Hermie. You have to find them and then you have to create a second generation using them that will lock down the feminized trait, and then all future seeds, you could say, okay, I got it now. This strain is feminized. And that's the way we will do it. And I don't know if I've given away the keys to the, you know, how that works.
Now, there's a handful of other people doing that.
Yeah.
You know, it just has to be organized, planned. Mm-hmm. You know, there has to be a little bit of math involved, a little bit of thought involved, and then some time and experiment.
Yeah. And like you said, the time and the math dictates that there's a need for space. And most of these small breeders, you know, that are claiming to sell a feminized seed, obviously they don't have the space to mm-hmm. say that they've done the homework to get that true feminized seed generation yet. Whereas the guys in Spain that have these huge grow operations, and even people here in the States, I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, right. There's some people here doing it.
But you need the area. I've got a guy right now in Nevada growing 700 C99 seedlings. All, you know, they just germinated them all at once.
Oh, wow. Sweet. Yeah, that's how to get a good selection, that's for sure.
Well, we're working with that company because they are one of 25 legal licensed providers to the medical marijuana dispensaries, and they will soon be supplying the rec dispensaries when that passes in November, which is expected to pass for Nevada. So they have a deal with us where we have signed off that we oversaw the seeds that were, you know, grown there, and I'm, you know, on a consultation basis linked to them, so they can call me to come out there, and I come out about every month, no more than, say, 60 days between visits to see how that's all going. And then I know when they produce our stuff, it's up to our standard, right. And they can put that right on the packaging, and they license that with us so that nobody else in their state can do that. So they're, once that catches on, I think the way that I like to best describe it, I think, is from the consumer side. You know, if you're walking into a dispensary, wouldn't you like to be able to walk up to the counter and say, oh, that strain right there is really Cinderella 99 because it comes in a licensed package that says it right on right. it, and it's hermetically sealed. And I know that
official.
This is coming from
C99 official.
Yeah, right. You know, yeah. That we were part of the production.
That's
of
such
that.
A big problem here, and all over is it's hard to be an informed consumer. It takes years to be able to identify strains from sight, smell, and taste. And most consumers are sold strains that aren't up to the name. You know,
how would they know? Too?
How would it's they know?
A little bit of you are stuck in a situation where you can walk into a dispensary in San Francisco and say, "Oh, I've heard about this strain, Sour Diesel. Could you give me some of that? I'd like to try that and see what it's like." And unfortunately, another guy, you know, you could travel, you know, over the weekend, go up to Seattle and go into another dispensary. And say the same thing, you know, give me some Sour Diesel, please. And gee, this isn't the same color. It doesn't have the same kind of resin on it. It doesn't taste the same, you know. And who could you complain to?
Right, no I one. Mean, right, right.
It's like, what if your brand, you're a cigarette smoker, diesel. You know, and you smoke Newports or something, and you go to, you know, the local 7-Eleven, and the taste of their Newports isn't the same as the ones downtown. I mean, that's what we've got
these
with marijuana.
These ain't Newports.
Right?
I got it.
You know what I'm saying? So imagine the day comes when you can actually compare with your mate what you think of a certain strain, you know, because you know I bought the licensed, hermetically sealed package that is an authentic product right. from the breeder. Certified by the breeder, I should say. And then these two guys would actually be comparing the same thing.
Yeah. So
if that's important to you.
Well, one thing I always ask people is what type of like terminology or slang do you use? You know, specific words in the cannabis industry that describes like the growing or the packaging or the selling or the actions in your daily workplace.
Well, you know, all kinds of words are bandied about these days. I'll show you the other side of the street before I invite you into my home here. But we sometimes get asked about CBD concentrates, those types of things, which sure. that's sort of an ancillary business or a peripheral that surrounds the cannabis industry, like edibles, for example, you know, those kinds of things, they all go hand in glove. Yeah. But we are a producer of seeds that will give you the high quality marijuana that can then be turned into those other products. And we are, when I say the other side of the street, I was kind of laughing and made a little bit of a joke down my sleeve the other day when some company asked us, we do CBD concentrates. And we were wondering, do you guys, you know, would you want to work with us? And I kind of replied, you know, have a look at our descriptions of our strains and tell me if you think that we make anything that's even remotely CBD or right. or low THC, I should say.
Yeah, it's
and
all
it was
high
kind
THC.
Of a joke, you know, and some of our followers like had a good laugh with us, you know, so that was kind of funny that they would ask that.
Right. So do you consider your, I mean, your the seed industry is both active cannabis industry as well as an ancillary
would
business
you, would
to,
you say
to
that?
Some degree. I don't
it's
know.
A
I'm
niche.
Asking.
I would call it more instead of ancillary as a niche market, you know, that right. growers all need seed to start from
it's
unless
such
they
a support
buy a clone.
Industry.
And, I don't know why, you know, I have to wax philosophical or something if I were to speak on, you know, why do people choose to grow a clone versus seeds and, you know, why the need for so many different strains? Why can't, you know, people just say, you know, there's this one or that one and that's enough. Or, mm-hmm. But it's something like wine, you know, people have these tastes for all the different subtleties in wine. And when you sit with somebody right. who's a wine connoisseur and the sommelier comes over and, you know, you have those deep discussions about all the different qualities. This marijuana is very similar. And I remember being in my senior year of high school and we all went over to one of the cool guys' house after school and we're all gathered around the table and guy breaks out the largest quantity of marijuana I ever saw in my life. It was like a quarter pound of Jamaican, yeah. you know,
seed
and sticks and
Jamaica,
stalks.
Bob Marley.
But it had a color to it that wasn't, you know, like homegrown green crap, you know, that was all we would had gotten up until mm-hmm. that point or something. And so they all waxed poetic. You know, they started smoking their joints and talking about how, well, you know, the bouquet and the, you know, this and that. I'm thinking, like, this is like listening to people talk about wine. So I think that there's that.
That's true.
Yeah, there's that element.
To be able to describe it
like that.
Right.
You know, there's so many coffee. When you think about things that people enjoy that are like those little pleasures of life, you know, the marijuana and coffee and cigars and scotch and wine and those, you know, it's all part of that whole human experience. And
right, it is of the palate, so to speak.
Yeah. It's a, right. it's a part of that whole mosaic of life, the little elements that come together to patch it all together.
What about like in the grow room, you're when you pollinate plants, what do you call that? Do you have like any special?
Pollination.
You just call it pollination. All right. Yeah. And when you harvest plants, what do you call that?
You want a slang term, like, yeah, we're cutting that room or cutting plants.
Cutting plants. So
cutting and trimming.
Yeah, cutting, trimming, sure.
Wet trim, dry trim, those kinds of things.
Right. Wet trim means trim it while it's wet. Dry trim means
yeah,
maybe
just... Yeah, it's not that the one is mutually exclusive. It's not that they're mutually exclusive. Wet trim is just simply the first step. The dry trim is this, you still need to do the dry trim on a bud that's been wet trimmed.
Sure.
So we're breaking
absolutely.
Up, like we did a harvest over the last few days, and it was basically the procedure is go to the top cola of the plant, cut it off. Maybe you're giving yourself a foot to 18 inches of the top of the plant, and then you're not cutting off all of the fan leaves and leaving – you know, a bit, like I said earlier, in this high and it's low humidity of Colorado, we need to leave a little bit more leaf material on there so it slows down the drying process and lets that cure at a better rate. And so that's the wet trim. And then they hang, say, 7 days at most. And by then, we're able to take the individual buds off each branch and do the dry trim, which is to remove all leaf material and leave nothing but a flower bud, and then, you know, carefully keep putting them into bins that are gingerly handled from that point on. Yeah. So that is like one of two tasks in the business that are my least favorite. I hate staking up plants and having to tie them up and, you know, support them and so on, because I don't mind doing it the first time, but if you have to come back in like 3 weeks later and go, oh, shit, all these other, you know, now I got to, and it's all sticky, and, you know, I just want that to be over with. You know, give that to somebody else or breed that out of the strain. I want the branches to be strong enough that they don't need staking anymore. That's my ultimate goal. I'd like to have plants that grow with everything that they already do, but don't need the stakes, and that would be wonderful. So I hate staking, and the other thing is the dry trimming, because I explained to you earlier, I brought the guy, for the audience out there, I brought Chip some Cinderella 99 that I grew from the recent release of seed, and I'm real happy and proud of how it came out. But I'm an old school grower, and it's not for sale what I make. You know, it goes in a mason jar, and I keep it in my kitchen to smoke.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. We almost smoke it all already.
Oh, but, yeah. Come on. You know. But point being, I hate trimming the dry trim. And if it's just for myself, there's a lot of sugar leaf left on those buds in those mason jars in my kitchen because I don't give a damn. It all gets me high. And I think those leaves have every bit as much resin on them as the flowers do. But I have heard arguments to, you know, that no, you really got to get that off because the chlorophyll changes the flavor. It's much tastier without all that. And so I have lately taken to pulling out one of my buds that I've poorly manicured and then just with my finger flicking off all of the leaves as I get it ready before I'll roll the joint and say, hey,
that's,
you know,
yeah, that's
it's
a great
been there
technique.
Protecting the bud the whole time, right? It looks like shit in the jar though, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
It looks like, what amateur brought you that jar of buds? Yeah, but you don't know how good it is. Like when you break that thing open, and you'll see.
So I got a question from our studio audience, we'll call it. So one of our most dedicated listeners has asked to have Mr. Stoll talk about Apollo 11, Apollo 13, and the best phenos since they share the same genius mom.
That's exactly right. They do share the same genius mom. I was explaining to Chip earlier that the idea with Apollo 13 was really just to be a stepping stone along the way to crossing Cinderella 99 with genius, and that was what ultimately was Apollo 11. But since I was communicating with a lot of people on the internet at that time, and you know, there was this overgrowth group and everything starting, everyone was encouraging me to go ahead and share even that intermediate step with them. And Richard at Heaven's Stairway was interested even enough to, he said, hey, look, you know, if you've got even like 500 or 1,000 of those seeds, let me put them up on my website and sell them. I'm sure there's a lot of buzz about that. And let's make some money, you know.
So that's what Apollo 11 was about.
No, 13.
13 was about that.
Remember now. Yeah, so Apollo 13 was a stepping stone, and I didn't quite finish that thought. Let me fill that in. Apollo 13 was when I was at the 75% point making Cinderella 99. I was in the P75 generation. I had a great male. P75 males, I still use them today. I mean, it's just adds a lot of hybrid vigor and makes the colas long and strong, builds a little bit bigger branches and such. So I like to use that P75 male. I used it on the Genius Mom to make seed that I called Apollo 13. I only had like 500 that I gave Richard, and then he sold them. And since then, I mean, people still talk about it today, right? And that's why we're here talking about
seeds.
And explaining and answering your caller's question, because this, you know, when you think about that, talk about 10 seeds per pack, that means 50 packs of seeds were sold of Apollo 13. And, you know, here we are 15, 16 years later talking about it has a little fan club associated with it all over the world.
So that's why it has the longer spear buds, because it's the P75 male.
P75 male had that effect, right. Mm-hmm. And now
the Apollo 11's branchy, had more of a branchy.
It's tighter, more compact. It has a more perfect balance of 50-50 princess genius in the phenotype. When you get your gentleman who asked the question said phenotype, and I should indicate to him, the Apollo 13, we re-released it this year, you know, because of that popularity and the mm-hmm. fact that I knew that there was sort of a cult mm-hmm. following behind that. I just wanted to do that for those people that are out there and to add to, you know, the ones who would like to join the club. And also Apollo 11 will be coming out shortly too. And the difference in the phenotypes is that Apollo 13 being less locked in, you get more variation. I've seen some that that are almost like bonsai. They're kind of small but dense and compact. And I've seen them grow real big. But for me, you know, it wasn't, you know, the end result that I wanted. I'm glad people like it, and I'll keep making it because they do like it, you know. And even Duke,
consumer's
my partner,
right.
is like
consumer's
a huge
right.
fan of the Apollo 13. But the 11 to me is like a more sublime, beautiful end result that is the best combination. If you look at our Instagram account, Brothers Grimm Seeds, at Brothers Grimm Seeds, you know, on Instagram. There's a picture of Apollo 11 in both, you know, there's, I think there's three pictures. In fact, we had a bud that we laid on the table and just took a picture of it before it was dry trimmed. So it was like spaghetti leaves, all these tentacles, of leaf, sparkly resin all over them.
Sparkles,
everything,
man,
all over
sparkles.
Them. Totally cool looking, right? But then, of course, we had to trim it and do the proper dry manicure, and we took a picture of it after that. And then I showed the bud while it was growing too. And it's so like resinous that when you look close up on the surfaces of the leaves and the flowers, it's like a baby seal's fur, you know what I mean? That white, it's so dense and thick together. I got a picture of one, I forget which one of our strains, that had two seeds emerging from the pods, and the resin on the pods is so like thick, like the baby seal fur thing. I had a lot of like a huge response on that one photo, because it just keeps popping back up and people will go like, oh my God. That Apollo 11, when it's growing, I believe is a denser, more resinous, better tasting, more predictable result. The A13 is going to be some variation. And among those phenotypes, people like a sort of a lemon pledgy smell, a chemi gassy
synthetic
fuel kind of smell coming from that same kind of base of a lemony. And that's what the Apollo 13 is kind of like to me. And I don't have that refined a palate for the aromas and the tastes as one might imagine, but I know that the circle of people around me usually are a good source of how I can refine, okay, well, what I think it is and what they then suggest to me. It's like my wife always tells me, like, you know, I'll taste something and she'll say, what do you taste? And I'm usually close, but, you know, it's one of those things where I'm just shitty at doing that, picking it out of the back of my brain. You know, I'll say, it's a tropical, like a coconutty, just fucking mango, you asshole. I'm like, yes, that's in mango, you know. And but I knew it was, my brain
like
knew it was
me.
Mango, you know. But I just can't put my tongue, my finger on it or what have you. And so it's like that with the pot too. And what
the
I'll
pot.
Think like, yeah, I'll say, what's it taste like to you, Tommy? You know, and he'll be like, well, it's this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, yes, that's what it was. You know, I thought it was this, but now that you say it, it's more that. I don't know why I'm like that, but it works for me. And so to answer the gentleman's question, the phenotypes to look for in the A13, I would say, you know, if you like that gassy, lemony, try to find one that grows vigorous enough and big enough. And anyway, where are you going to find them, you know, other than buying our new seeds, which...
He's waiting to buy your new seeds, I guarantee you.
Well, we have the Apollo 13 still available. We sold out of a couple already. We were out of the Grimdica and Hashmaster.
Oh, all right.
Because we only had the two Indica strains, and people are buying them up like crazy.
I believe that was one of my other questions, is the Grimdica. Oh, yeah, Grimica. Like to hear about the new Rosetta Stone and the Grimica.
It's Grimdica.
Grimdica.
Yeah.
Grimdica.
I mean, you know, because we're kind of like sort of the implication there. Yeah. The implication was it's Indica, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're Brothers Grimm. So Grimdica. And it's
the
connotation that I'm trying to impart on that moniker is that it's our definition of Indica. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, we even put our name on it. It's Grimdica. We will get more of it out there. And I think the international supplier just tapped us for everything we had recently. And it's on its way to being redistributed all throughout the world. But at the moment, for the U.S. distribution, we were open since April. And here we are, end of August. People have had their chance to get it and buy it up here. And so we had whatever we had left, we sent out to the worldwide market. And but Cinderella 99, we have made sure that we wouldn't run out of that, and Apollo 13. The Rosetta Stone you asked about is an amazing strain. I would say that, you know, if you're going to get anything that's new from us, that would be my top recommendation. It is a Jack Herer female crossed to that P75 male that I was telling you about, how it really seems to add that hybrid vigor and give you a bigger larger colas and things like that, while not taking away from what that female generally would bring to the table. And it seemed to result in the Rosetta Stone giving us two main phenotypes, three. I'll get into the third one, but mainly the first two are that you have a compact Jack Herer, which grows bigger, thicker buds on a stockier frame. Again, you know, getting away from the staking and netting and stuff and trying to make these plants stand on their own. And it's really, I hit it on this one. I got the Jack Herer flavor and the Jack Herer aroma. It's just dead nuts right on that sandalwoody cologne that I told you earlier. I would like to have it turned into a men's cologne. Well, that scent is on that stocky frame, but we also have another phenotype that is huge. It looks like a juniper tree, you know, like when you go to France and you see those long, tall trees that are along the sides of the road, right? I think they call them junipers. I'm not sure. But anyway, they have that elongated, you know, stretched out oval shape. And that's how this thing is, like a Christmas tree. Like a Christmas tree.
And I grew up with that as a slang terminology for great weed. Christmas tree.
Christmas tree. Uncle Leroy passed the reef. That's why they call it reefer, maybe, huh?
Reefer man. Yeah, I grew up Christmas tree. I grew up in the South. We always had slings for everything.
Reefer.
Right.
Pass the reefer.
Pass the reefer, man.
I like to have a reefer.
Yeah, fire it up.
Some people give me a hog leg. Some awesome joints here and the concentrates and things like that that I've smoked. Some of that's some pretty nice stuff, but don't let me drift off. Where was we?
The
Rosetta Stone, huge phenotype. This thing is like, some kind of tall Christmas tree. And the buds are really long, huge donkey dick type things, right? And they curve up from the stalk in an almost like upright way so that the weight isn't pulling them sideways and falling down. So they stand up. We want to test it outside next year, but we're going to keep the clone of the one that we have going right now in flowering. And it's just extremely impressive. So I would say the third phenotype is the stocky phenotype that just doesn't seem to put out as much resin and have the right flavor. You'll get a few. You're just going to find the ones that are like, oh, but this one is really outstanding. So you'll cull out the ones that aren't your favorite and pick that one and just clone ad infinitum from there if I were growing with that myself, you know.
Right. Awesome.
What else did you want? Which other strain were you interested in?
I believe the other question was what's Rosetta Stone.
Yeah, right, we just covered that.
Right, Rosetta Stone, Grimdica.
Oh, Grimdica. Like I say, it's our indica, and I'll go a little deeper, next level deeper.
Next level stuff right here, real dirt. This is the real dirt.
It's an F1. Remember we were talking about those F numbers F1s, earlier? Yeah. It's a great example of an F1. This is an Afghani of one particular area of Afghanistan crossed with another Afghani from another region of Afghanistan. Okay. So it's
two unrelated P1s that are unrelated but look similar.
Parental stock. That's true that the P number is used too, and P stands for parental stock. So you P1 from one area and say P, we'll call it P2 from the other. And then we make an F1 hybrid. And that's what we're calling Grimdica. And that's why when you grow those seeds, you're getting a plant that every one of them looks like the other. And they are really predictable in terms of not only their height and diameters and resin production, flowering time, everything. You know, they all finish together.
Yeah, that sounds great.
We've done another generation of... I've never mentioned this to anybody yet, but we crossed that to a skunk.
More real dirt.
Yeah. We do a skunk number one from the old days, like the SSSC.
Skunk number one.
We took our original skunk number one male.
Euro skunk or original?
No, from the original Super skunk. Sativa Seed Club seed.
Listen to that. Real dirt right here.
We got both a female and a male from some seeds that we had saved from the old days on that one. And by the way, you can never save seeds for like 10, 20 years unless you freeze them. So if people are wondering about how to keep seeds for a long time, that's how you do it. So we took out frozen seed. We made skunk number one all over again from the 80s. We got the male to cross to our Grimdica and recently are looking at the results of that. And it's making these amazing big, chunky,
big, huge colas.
With a crazy aroma, you know. So we'll see what happens from there. We might not just release that seed line. We may use that to get to, like, as a stepping stone, as I often do, an end result. I don't release, in general, the stepping stones along the way, but we're on our way to something there that looks really promising.
Yeah, Afghan skunk, man, that's always a great combo. That's for sure.
And I posted today, and pretty recently we did the Genius to the Haze thing, you know, and that's been...
Super Silver Haze or...
Super Silver Haze, Cinderella 99. And the parents there were... There's a Cinderella 99 cut that's been going around that was from the original seed, obviously, from Heaven's Stairway, and they called it the Grail. Right. It's kind of known among people who collect Elite clones as the Grail cut of C99. Well... reliable breeder friend in our little network of friends took that Grail C99, crossed it to a Super Silver Haze male that he had been working with and had tested out and had seen. Remember earlier I was explaining to you, how do you test a male and see, you know, is he any good or not? Well, what's the real proof of the pudding? It would be, what kind of daughters does he make? You know, you breed him to several females and see what's the common denominator. What's the effect that he has?
Put some research.
Across the board. Well, this guy had done the research, know what kinds of effects that the Super Silver Haze male gave to the equation, crossed it to the Grail, and the resulting seeds, we got some, grew them out, got a great looking male, crossed it to both Princess and Genius and Cinderella 99 and Apollo 13, you know, and we just wanted to see across the board what will be the effects of that. And right now I've been posting
your Instagram account's on great.
Thank you.
Yeah, loving seeing those quality photos. That's
thank
for sure.
you. Yeah, you should check out at Mr. Soul_C99 as well. That's where most of my like personal photography stuff is.
And then great.
The Brothers Grimm Seeds is specifically to the company things, only pictures of stuff that's really relates to the company directly. So enjoy that. And Duke Diamond, it's Duke_Diamond_VA. He's my partner. He's the other half of Brothers Grimm and brings an enormous contribution to the equation. The guy's got 30 incredible elite clones, and he's been a grower breeder for 20 years. He's 36 years old, so he basically started at 16 years old, grew up in a farming community in Virginia growing tomatoes, and, you know, got all the right kind of experience to know what to do in this business, and he's just a really solid, great guy, too. So we have a wonderful partnership. I'm enjoying working with him, and I just got sidetracked completely on where I was going until I started talking
about him. We talked about Rosetta Stone. We talked about Grimdica, and the last question was the best phenotype of A11.
Oh, the A11. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very consistent, so all you want to look for there is which plant do you think is the size and resin production and flavor that suits you most. And it's going to be a fine difference between them all. They're all going to be pretty close, and you're all almost going to say, well, I'm not so sure whether this one is just doing better because it's under a little more sweet spot under the light, or is it because, you know, it's actually a better sister than her sister? You know, they're that close. It's going to be a personal preference at that point, but they're all going to be fast flowering, high resin production up to the point where, like I say, it looks like baby seal fur on the leaves and flowers. And if you go to our Instagram account, you will see a really nice picture of that. Just scroll down a little ways and just put it in that linear format where you can scroll down and not have to go back and forth from the big grid to each picture one at a time, if you follow. I'm no kid, you know, and I know how to do that. So
you're right.
Anyway, it is not a difficult thing. You will know the right phenotype, but you don't need me to help. Grow half a dozen of them and find a great looking female that suits your nose and your, you know, palate and your growing style, and it'll be clear to you. In fact, if I were there trying to tell you which one to pick, you'd probably argue with me and say, no, I like this one better.
That's awesome.
I don't know.
Well, you know, it's been an incredible conversation today. I think we could sit and talk here for hours. We're going to have a part two in the future.
I would be happy to do it.
Really appreciate you coming over, Mr. Soul. It's been
Chip.
You know, a fun time, that's for sure.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Real Dirt, Mr. Soul, Chip Baker.
That's it.
another excellent episode of The Real Dirt. I'd like to give a shout out to all of my sponsors: Denver Consulting, Bickle Consulting, Archive Seed Bank, Canna Craft, Cultivate Colorado. Let's also hear it for Willow, Lisa, David, Chris, Michael, and Hollis, my production team. Keep it dirty, my friends.